We'll begin with verse 24 tonight. Let's read it through the 29th verse. Verse 30 actually belongs to the 32nd chapter. So we'll read from the 24th chapter to the 29th chapter. We want to remember where Moses is. The Lord has told them he's going to go by way of the grave. The Lord has given Joshua the charge to take up the mantle when Moses leaves the scene. They're on the plains of Moab preparing this nation to cross Jordan. And it came to pass when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this law in a book until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against thee. For I know thy rebellion and thy stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, ye have been rebellious against the Lord, and how much more after my death? Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears, and call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know, and I think of what Moses is telling this nation here. For I know, and I'm sure this was a heartache to Moses, for I know that after my death, ye will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because ye will do evil in the sight of the Lord, to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. The instructions and the warnings that Moses is giving this nation, what would happen to them, we know after his death they would be in the promised land. They would be in the land that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In verses 24 and 25 and 26, we see that he commands the Levites. And from Numbers 3, verse 28, we see the Kohathites are the ones that God charged to take care of the sanctuary. The charge of the sanctuary belonged to the Kohathites. They took care of the sanctuary, which included the furniture in the holy place, the furniture in the most holy place. And it was borne on their shoulders. They weren't given wagons. They bore these heavy articles on their shoulders, that acacia wood covered with gold, the ark, which we're going to look at tonight, we'll get into that. It says, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the ark of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness. And if you've noticed, every time a witness is spoken, it's against this nation. Against, when you have to testify regarding something, it's usually you testify for someone. You give them your word, you testify for them. But Moses, what God is giving Moses here is against this nation. It is against. And to me, that's sad that this nation had, Moses knew what was coming. That's all I can say. In the side of the ark, I would like to turn back to Exodus 25. Would like to look at a couple of pieces of the tabernacle in connection with this. I would like to read verses 10 and 11 in regards to the ark of Exodus 25. And we know Moses is the one that God gave these instructions for. And each piece speaks of Jesus. In verse 10, and they shall make an ark of shittim wood or acacia wood. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold within and without. Shalt thou overlay it, and shall make upon it a crown of gold round about. Now the acacia wood here, the ark was made of acacia wood. That speaks of Jesus' incorruptible humanity. Let's look at Psalm 16. We know Jesus did not His body did not corrupt when it was in the grave. Yes, Psalm 16 and the 10th verse. For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. So in this ark being made of acacia wood, this was known as incorruptible wood. And that's what Christ's humanity was, incorruptible. It was overlaid within and without in verse 11. That acacia wood was covered with gold. He was a God-man. And the ark here speaks of Christ and what he is. Now, on top of the ark, we know that the mercy seat sat. Let's read in verse 17 of this 25th chapter. And thou shalt make a mercy seat. And we notice that there are no dimensions given to that as far as mercy. Thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. Two cubits and a half shall be the length thereof. I guess I have a note here in Psalms 103 that there is no limit to his mercy. That's what there is no limit to, is his mercy. Let's begin verse 17 again. And thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit and a half the breadth thereof. And thou shalt make 2 cherubims of gold, of beaten or turned work shalt thou make them from the 2 ends of the mercy seat, and make 1 cherub on the one end and the other cherub on the other end. Even of the mercy seat shall ye make the cherubims from the 2 ends thereof. And the cherubim shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering or overshadowing the mercy seat with their wings. And their faces shall look one to another. Toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubims be. Now, this mercy seat was made of pure gold. Out of this chunk of gold, the mercy seat was made. Out of it was beaten the cherubims. It was all one piece of gold. The cherubims were not attached. They were made of this same hunk of gold. And in verse 21 of this 25th chapter, and thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee. The fact that the mercy seat and the cherubim were of one piece of gold speaks that Jesus and his bride are one, because the cherubim speak of his bride. Now, the mercy seat, the ark pointed to, it spoke of what Jesus, what he is himself. The mercy seat spoke of his work. The mercy seat points to Jesus' work in meeting the claims of Jehovah's justice at the cross. Remember, on the Day of Atonement over in Leviticus 16:14, and I'd like to turn there, the high priest went in once a year and sprinkled the blood on that mercy seat. And that was just rolling ahead everyone's sins for 1 year, looking forward to Jesus shedding his sinless blood for each one of us. Back in Exodus 25:22, it says, and there between the cherubim, and there I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat. Now see, that's where Jehovah's throne was on earth, between the cherubim. From between the 2 cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. Now, Jesus was everything. He was the ark. He and his bride are the mercy seat and the cherubim. Everything points to him. Let's turn to Romans 10:4. Without him, there's no basis. He met all the demands of the law. Romans 10 and the 4th verse. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. He was the only one that could fulfill that law. That's why he came, to fulfill the law. Back in Deuteronomy, we read here that the the book, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant. Now, Jesus was the Ark. He was also the law. The law was in Christ, and this nation Israel didn't have the ability to keep the law. Let's look at James 2. The old creation cannot keep the law. That's why he gave the law, which we'll read here in a little bit, to show up that the old creation can't. James 2 and the 10th verse. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now if thou commit no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye and do so, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. For he shall have judgment without mercy, that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. Now the book of the covenant, and this is what Moses, he put in the side of the ark here, was covered by the mercy seat. The law itself brought death. You didn't keep the law, you died. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 3. 2 Corinthians 3, and we'll read verses 6 and 7. Who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter, or the law, killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. But if the ministration of death, written and engraved in stones, was glorious, so that the children of Israel could not steadfastly behold the face of Moses for the glory of his countenance, which glory was to be done away, how shall not the ministration of the Spirit be much more glorious? We have an incident in 1 Samuel 6, how when they looked on the law, they died. 1 Samuel 6. This is when the ark was returned from the Philistines. We'll begin in the 16th verse of 1 Samuel 6. And when the five lords of the Philistines had seen it, they returned to Ekron the same day. And these are the golden emerods which the Philistines returned for a trespass offering unto the Lord. For Ashdod one, for Gaza one, for Ascalon one, for Gath one, and for Ekron one. And the golden mice, according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines, belonging to the five lords, both of fenced cities and of country villages, even unto the stone, great stone of Abel, whereon they set down the ark of the Lord, which stone remaineth unto this day in the field of Joshua, the Bethshemite. And he smote the men of Bethshemesh, because they looked into the ark of the Lord. Even he smote of the people 50,000, 70 men, and the people lamented, because the Lord had smitten many, the people, with a great slaughter. I have a note here, because they looked, they removed the mercy seat, and they severed mercy from judgment. That law had to be covered with the mercy seat, or it would cause death. Let's look at Romans 7:12. The law was holy, just, and good. Romans 7, and let's begin with the 12th verse. Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, just, and good. Was then that which is good made death unto me? God forbid. But sin, that it might appear sin, working death in me by that which is good, that sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful. Let's look at Romans 3, the reason that the Lord gave the law. And I'm thankful that the law was fulfilled in Christ, and now it's fulfilled in us and not by us. We have nothing to do with it. We walk in the Spirit, and it's fulfilled in us. And that's in Romans 8, 2 and 3. Romans 3, and we'll read verses 19 and 20. Now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified in his sight. For by the law is the knowledge, or the recognition, of sin. It was shown, sin was given to show up. The law was given to show up sin. Now let's look at the articles that were in the Ark of the Covenant. The Book of the Covenant was there, but there were two other articles too, in Hebrews 9 and the 4th verse. And with all of these, there were instructions given to put them in the Ark. Hebrews 9, and we'll begin with the 4th verse. We'll begin with the 3rd verse. Hebrews 9:3. And after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer, and the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna, an Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. Each one of these spoke of Jesus. They were just the shadow which brought us to the substance, which is Jesus Christ. In Exodus 16, 33 and 34, the instruction was given to put the manna, golden pot of manna, into the ark. I'd like to read number 17 regarding Aaron's rod that budded. Number 17, again, they were murmuring over who was to have the leadership. Let's just begin with the first verse. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and take every one of them a rod according to the house of their fathers, of all their princes, according to the house of their fathers, 12 rods. Write thou every man's name upon his rod. And thou shalt write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi. For one rod shall be for the head of the house of their fathers. And thou shalt lay them up in the tabernacle of the congregation before the testimony, where I shall meet with you. And it shall come to pass that the man's rod, whom I shall choose, shall blossom, and I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, whereby they murmur against you. And Moses spake unto the children of Israel, and every one of their princes gave him a piece, a rod apiece, for each prince one according to their father's house, even 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among their rods. And Moses laid up the rods before the Lord in the tabernacle of witness. And it came to pass that on the morrow Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded, and brought forth buds, and bloomed blossoms, and yielded fruit, almonds. And Moses brought out all the rods from before the Lord unto all the children of Israel, and they looked, and took every man his rod. And the Lord said unto Moses, Bring Aaron's rod again before the testimony, to be kept for a token against the rebels. And thou shalt quite take away their murmurings from me, that they die not. This nation murmured from day one what Moses had to put up with. Each of these three articles, witness of God's faithfulness. God gave them manna every day, the entire time they were in the wilderness. It testified, these three articles testified to God's mercy that was showed amongst all the murmurings. God many times wanted to just do away with them and start over with Moses. But these three articles showed of the faithfulness and the mercy that God showed to this nation. It also, these three articles also witness to God's instructions in His ways. In His ways. This is what the Book of the Covenant was all about. His ways. He had Moses write down His ways. They were His people. They were to walk according to His ways. It also showed in these three articles in the Ark that He never left or forsook them, though He did know their hearts. He knew their hearts, and yet the mercy and the faithfulness and the time that He took to give them instructions. Only Jehovah, who is long-suffering, can do this. In verse 27, remember Moses is speaking, For I know. We see that down in verse 29 also. For I know. This know here, it means to discern, to recognize, to be acquainted, to have knowledge, to know by experience. And Moses did. He knew this nation. He knew their hearts. The Lord gave him discernment regarding their hearts. For I know thy rebellion. Now he's speaking to this nation. He's speaking in plain words to them. For I know thy rebellion. This rebellion here, it speaks of their disobedience or their contentions. And thy stiff neck. This stiff here means hard, firm, rigid, or unbending. This is what their neck was. They were stiff-necked people. And we'll see how God even refers to them as stiff-necked people. Rebellion is a result of disobedience. Disobedience is the result of unbelief. Ultimately, unbelief is sin. I'd like to turn to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin, and this is the sin of unbelief, which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Let's look at Numbers 14. This chapter in Numbers is very sad to me. God had brought them to the place that to show them that he loved them, and yet they didn't believe him. Numbers 14, and I would like to read the first four verses, and see what this first generation is planting in this second generation's heart. In verse 1, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept, and these were tears of unbelief. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children, there's that second generation, should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Right there, when they said in chapter 13 also, that we can't go. There's giants. And then when they said this, oh, that our little ones would be a prey. They're planting seeds of unbelief in that second generation's heart. Anytime someone plants doubt, that's a seed of unbelief. And it's very, very sad when those seeds are planted. Let's look back in Deuteronomy 1. Moses, I like his candor. He calls them like he sees them. Deuteronomy 1, I would like to read verses 25 and 26. Again, this is regarding there at Kadesh Barnea. And they took of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down unto us and brought us word again and said, it is a good land which the Lord our God doth give us. Notwithstanding, we would not go up, but rebelled. See, Moses knew their rebellion, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God. Let's look at 1 Samuel 15. God does not take lightly to rebellion. 1 Samuel 15, we'll begin with the 22nd verse, because verses 22 and 23 go together. And Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. That's of Satan. Rebellion is from Satan. And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Samuel tells Saul, because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. This meaning of rebellion here in 1 Samuel 15, 23, it means stubborn, a refusal to submit to authority. You seen anybody like that? Let's turn over to Hebrews 3. I want to read verses 12 and 13. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened, and this word hardened means unyielding, through the deceitfulness of sin. They were called stiff-necked. They'd become hardened. They became unyielding. As I thought about being stiff-necked, I likened it to our natural body. The neck is the connection between the head and the body. The head directs the body by way of the neck. If the neck is stiff or unbending, the body doesn't respond well. If you have a stiff neck, you have to turn the whole body. You can't just bend the neck. Israel was unyielding. The nation of Israel was stiff-necked. They would not bend. They would not yield to their head, who was Jehovah. They were stiff-necked. And I have several scriptures here that have not only God referring to this nation as stiff-necked, but others as well. Let's begin with Exodus 32. God himself referred to them as stiff-necked people. He knew they would be to fulfill his purposes. Exodus 32 and the 9th verse. And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Let's look at chapter 33 and the 3rd verse. In the first verse it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, and then into the 3rd verse, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. Then in verse 5, for the Lord had said unto Moses, say unto the children of Israel, ye are a stiff-necked people. I will come up into the midst of thee in a moment and consume thee. Now therefore put off thy ornaments from thee, that I may know what to do unto thee. Let's look over in Exodus 34. Moses refers to them as a stiff-necked people. 34:9, this is when Moses makes intercession for this nation. Verse 8, and Moses made haste and bowed his head toward the earth and worshipped. And he said, if now I have found grace in thy sight, O Lord, let my Lord, I pray thee, go among us, for it is a stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us for thine inheritance. I would like to look at, there's several others in the Old Testament, but I would like to look at Acts 7:51. After all the time that elapsed from the time of Moses to the time of Stephen, that nation's attitude has not changed one bit. They still haven't changed, and it's going to take 7 years of tribulation to get that neck to be yielding. Acts 7:51, ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, ye do always resist the Holy Ghost. As your fathers did, so do ye. This word here means stiff-necked. In the Greek, it means obstinate. Have you ever been around anybody that's obstinate? This is what this nation Israel still is today. Let's continue on in this verse. And back in Deuteronomy 31. He says, for I know thy rebellion and thy stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, ye have been rebellious against the Lord. From the very time they left Egypt, they were rebellious. Moses saw this for 40 years. This rebellious, it means to resist. They always wanted to go back to Egypt. They complained that they were slaves. Oh, God has not heard our voice. You know, when is God going to deliver us? God delivers them. Then they complain. From day one, let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. Rebellious means to resist, to contend against, to reject, to refuse, to be stubborn, to be obstinate, to be unyielding. Moses saw this, and it hasn't changed. It hadn't changed in the last 40 years. Let's look at Deuteronomy 9. This is when he's speaking to this nation. Deuteronomy 9 and the 7th verse. Remember and forget not how thou provokest the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness from the day that thou didst depart out of the land of Egypt until ye came into this place. And this place is right where they are now, in the plains of Moab. Ye have been rebellious against the Lord. Then again in verse 24 of this same chapter, Moses again says, ye have been rebellious against the Lord from the day that I knew you. This is a description of the old creation heart. Moses had witnessed with his own eyes, he was acquainted with this rebellion for 40 years. They'd been very rebellious. Let's look at Jeremiah 17:9. This is what they were manifesting. This is what the flesh manifests. Jeremiah 17, and I would like to read the 9th verse. And this is the old creation heart. The heart is, present tense, deceitful. This word deceitful here means fraudulent. What do you think of when you hear the word fraudulent? Above all things, and desperately wicked. Or in other words, it's incurably sick. That's why God had to put the flesh to death. There was no cure for sin but to put it to death. Who can know it? There are those that act righteous. But you know, I'm thankful for Hebrews 4:13, and I would like to... They put on a righteous act. I'm self-righteous. Well, yeah, you might act the part, but you're not pulling the wool over God's eyes. Hebrews 4:13, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. We can't pull anything over on God. I thank the Lord for that. We may pull the wool over other people's eyes, but God's not fooled. Let's look at verse 28. Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. Gather here means to assemble. Moses calls together those who would be responsible spiritually for the people in his absence. We read in 1 Timothy 3 regarding the bishops, which are the overseers, and the deacons who serve under the oversight of the bishops. They are the responsible ones to feed God's sheep. Their lives must be blameless before the Lord because they are his representatives. These elders of the tribes and the officers were to be Moses' representatives to the people. What kind of an example are you going to live before the people? Are you going to live a godly example? Or are you going to live the way you want to live, an ungodly example? I would like to turn to Acts 20. Paul went through the same thing. It was nearly time for him to go to glory, and he spoke to this Ephesian assembly, to the elders in the Ephesian assembly. We'll begin with the 25th verse of Acts 20. And now, behold, I know that ye all, among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God, shall see my face no more. Wherefore I take to you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men. For I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsels or purposes of God. Take heed, therefore, unto yourselves and to all the flock, which over the which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers, there's the bishops, and to feed the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. And here's verse 29, Paul speaking, For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. Paul here, he is speaking to the elders at the assembly of Ephesus. He had, as Moses had, spiritual discernment of what would happen in his absence. He could discern, and he knew, because the Lord had given him discernment. Of those who would leave their first love. Remember, the church of Ephesus, there were those, Paul knew, he could discern that there would be those that left their first love. And that's where, why it is written in Revelation 2:4 regarding this assembly at Ephesus. The Lord had one thing against them, that they left their first love. Paul knew that would happen. Paul could see. He had given the word. A pastor can tell if the word is being taken in, if it's taken, heard by a spiritual heart, the ears of the heart. They know, just as Paul knew. He said, for I know this. He knew it. The word, when we take in the word, it changes us. It changes us from the inside out. And this is what Paul knew. Aren't those like false teachers, those wolves? Not necessarily false. It could be anyone in the assembly. Okay. Now let's look back at Deuteronomy 31. In the last part of this verse, it says that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. He's calling heaven and earth as witnesses to what he is telling this nation. Heaven and earth will outlast the changes of human life. Heaven and earth were Moses' witnesses that he, in fact, informed these elders and these officers. Let's look at verse 29. Again, Moses says, For I know that after my death, you will utterly corrupt yourselves. Turn aside from the way or the course which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord, to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. Moses knew after he went by the way of the grave, he knew he was going. God told him that this nation would utterly or absolutely corrupt and turn aside from the course which he had been instructed by God to command this nation. This word corrupt, it means to destroy. Think of this. This nation would utterly corrupt itself, to destroy, to ruin, to lay in ruins. To destroy is one way, that is corrupt or perverted. In other words, to act wicked. Moses knew this. Remember, we studied last week, they had idols for the 40 years they'd gone through that wilderness. He was no dummy. He knew what was going on. And he knew they would turn. This turn here means to go away, to depart. That is to fall away from worshiping God. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians 2. And this is the time in which we are living right now. 2 Thessalonians 2, and let's read the third verse. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. I would like to turn to Psalms 106. We have the four steps to apostasy in verses 34 to 37. I looked up the word apostasy. It means a falling away, a withdrawal, or a defection. And this is what the nation Israel did. They apostatized. They turned from God. And the bottom line was, the reason is because they did not obey what he told them. That was the bottom line. God wanted obedience. They didn't obey. So they just begin the downward trend. 34, verse 34 of Psalms 106. They did not destroy the nations concerning whom the Lord commanded them. We read of that in Deuteronomy 7, verses 2 to 4. They were specifically told of all those seven nations, they were to kill, utterly destroy them. Did they? No. Verse 35, but were mingled among the heathen, and they learned their works. Mingled, got the meaning to mingle, and it's very serious. To braid, to intermix, or technically to traffic with. Verse 36, and they served their idols, which were a snare unto them, They became enslaved to those idols. Remember how they wanted to be like the rest of the nations around about them? They served their idols and they became enslaved to them. Verse 37. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto demons. This sacrifice means they slaughtered them in worship to an idol. God did not tell them to do that. Each of these steps that they took, each of these steps downward, were in direct rebellion against God. Let's read verses 39 to 42 of Psalms 106. Thus were they defiled with their own works, and went a-whoring with their own inventions. Therefore was the wrath of the Lord kindled against his people, insomuch that he abhorred his own inheritance. And he gave them into the hand of the heathen, and they that hated them ruled over them. Their enemies also oppressed them, and they were brought into subjection under their hand. All because of rebellion. Back in Deuteronomy 31, I want to touch on what Mom had made a comment before the lesson started tonight. And it really, really, the Lord spoke to me quite a bit about it in study this afternoon. To provoke him, we'll read the verse again, for I know that after my death ye will utterly corrupt yourselves, turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because ye will do evil in the sight of the Lord. To provoke him to anger, and this is the part, to provoke him to anger through the work or the activity of your hands. This is the activity of your hands. What are your hands active with? This nation was not bringing glory to God because they were worshiping idols. What were they doing with their hands? They were worshiping idols with them. Let's look at Isaiah 2. The work of our hands. The Lord wants glory brought to him with the activity of our hands. Isaiah 2 and the 8th verse. Their land also is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. Over in chapter 17 of Isaiah. Isaiah 17 verses 7 and 8. And at that day shall a man look to his maker, and his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel. And he shall not look to the altars, the work of his hands, neither shall respect that which his fingers have made, either the groves or the images. Let's look at Isaiah 31. Isaiah 31 and the 7th verse. For in that day every man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin. The Lord took me over to Leviticus 8 as I was looking into this regarding the activity of our hands. And this is what the Lord wants our hands filled with, is him. Leviticus 8, we're not going to read it all. This is the consecration of the priests. Consecration means a filling of the hands. What are our hands filled with? Let's read verse 23 to 29. This is where the blood was applied. Each part of the body is sanctified or set apart for the consecration unto God. Verse 23, speaking of the ram of consecration, and he slew it, and Moses took of the blood of it and put it on the tip of Aaron's right ear, and upon the thumb of his right hand, and upon the great toe of his right foot. And he brought Aaron's sons, and Moses put of the blood upon the tip of their right ear, upon the thumbs of their right hands, and upon the great toes of their right feet. And Moses sprinkled the blood upon the altar round about. And he took the fat, and the rump, and all the fat that was upon the inwards, and the caul above the liver, and the two kidneys, and their fat, and the right shoulder. And out of the basket of unleavened bread that was before the Lord, he took one unleavened cake, a cake of oiled bread, one wafer, and put them on the fat and upon the right shoulder. And he put And he put all upon Aaron's hands and upon his sons' hands, and waved them for a wave offering before the Lord. And Moses took them off their hands and burnt them on the altar, upon the burnt offering. They were consecrations for a sweet savor. It is an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Those priests' hands, their ear speaks that their hearing, what they heard, was their ear was sanctified to the hearing of God's word. What do we hear with this ear? What do we do with this right thumb? What do we do? This speaks of our service. The toe speaks of our walk. Is our walk filled with Christ? Is our hands, what our hands are filled, are they filled with Christ? Are they consecrated? Are they filled up with Him? Everything we do, everything we hear, our hands do and our feet do, are to bring glory unto the Lord. Everything, our whole life is to be filled with Him. In closing, I would like to look at Joshua 23. Moses knew that this nation would apostatize. They would turn away from God. Joshua also knew it. Remember, he was there with Moses. I would like to begin, I want to read the first three verses. Joshua 23, 1 to 3. And it came to pass a long time after that the Lord had given rest unto Israel from all their enemies round about, that Joshua waxed old and stricken in age. And Joshua called for all Israel. Notice how he calls them too. And for their elders, and for their heads, and for their judges, and for their officers, and said unto them, I am old and stricken in age, and ye have seen all that the Lord your God hath done unto all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he that hath fought for you. Joshua wanted to bring to mind to them, hey, remember, God's done all this for you. Then, look down at verse 13. Again, Joshua uses the same word. Know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until ye perish from off this good land, which the Lord your God hath given you. And behold, this day I am going the way of all earth. He knew he was going to glory. And ye know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, and not one thing hath failed thereof. Therefore it shall come to pass, that is, all good things are come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon you all evil things, until he have destroyed you from off this good land, which the Lord your God hath given you. When? Notice Joshua said, when? Not if. It was when ye have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods, and bowed yourselves to them, then shall the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given you. God gave these spiritual discernment, these leaders, Moses, Joshua. He knew these people. He could see from their walk, from their activity, that they weren't all for God. They were all for self. They did not have a hearing heart to listen to anything Moses told them, anything Joshua told them. They did what they wanted. Man has not changed since that time. Man is still the same, and he will reap a far greater judgment because of his disobedience.